So yes, we, as also said, we're continuing our series through Romans, and we're going to be looking at chapter 10, and there will be verses coming up, but it won't be the whole thing. So I will read the whole thing, but you, if you've got your Bible or an app with you, you may want to follow along. And this section of Romans, well, the whole book of Romans is quite dense, I suppose you could say, quite heavy. And this section we're in now is quite heavy, and it may feel a bit of a slog, and there's some really heavy concepts in there. How many times can I say heavy? Let's find out as we go through. But all I'm going to do this morning, really, I'm just going to go through the passage and pull out what are the kind of things I think Paul is saying, what he's trying to say. And actually, this chapter, chapter 10, is, I think, one that really reveals God's heart for everyone, for all of us. Last week, Oz spoke on chapter 9, which was a passage about God's choice and his sovereign choice and the issue. And that's the context of who God has chosen in terms of a nation. Paul is talking about the relationship between Israel and the Gentiles, who are the non-Jews, everyone who's not a Jew is a Gentile. And Paul's saying, well, God's chosen Israel, but he seems to be working among the Gentiles. So does that mean he's chosen the Gentiles and he's not chosen Israel, that he's changed? And this is kind of the argument that Paul follows in these chapters. And so in chapter 10, we're just going to sort of pull a bit out of that and think, and it's particularly in chapter 10, it's about the relationship between faith and the law, the Jewish law, and how righteousness is achieved. And we're going to start, I'm going to cheat a little bit. We're doing Romans 10, but I have to start with the end of Romans chapter 9, because I think that's kind of a foundation for what Paul goes on to say in chapter 10. So if, Wes, if you could bring up the first slide, I'm going to read chapter 9, verses 30 to 32. What then shall we say? That the Gentiles who did not pursue righteousness have obtained it, a righteousness that is by faith. But Israel, who pursued the law of righteousness, has not attained it. Why not? Because they pursued it not by faith, but as if it were by works. They stumbled over the stumbling stone. So Paul kind of is saying something quite deep here, quite intense and profound. He's saying God has granted righteousness to those who weren't even looking for righteousness. And yet those who were seeking and pursuing righteousness have not been able to lay hold of it. Now there's a well-known story or a joke, it's an old one. Don't stop me if you've heard it before, because that, you know, that would ruin it. I'm just going to tell it. It's about a vicar who has a problem with his church roof, like all vicars do. And he decides that the answer to this, the way he's going to get money to repair the church roof, is to do the lottery. So he prays to God and he says, God, you know, we need the money to repair the church roof. So let us win the lottery. And he prays. And then the weekend comes, the lottery's drawn, and he doesn't win. So he goes back to God, and God desperately needs this money. It's not for me, it's for your church, to repair your church. The week passes, the lottery is drawn, he doesn't win. So he goes back to God a third time and says, God, at the end of my tether, we need this. We've got to win the lottery. And as he's praying, a voice comes from heaven and says, look, meet me halfway. At least buy a ticket. And of course, the joke is you can't win the lottery without buying the ticket. You know, not even God can help you win the lottery if you don't buy a ticket. But that is actually precisely what Paul is saying. He's saying those who have not bought a ticket have won the lottery. That's precisely what he's saying. If you are not Jewish, which I think is probably most of us, maybe all of us here, I don't know about people watching on the live stream, but if you are not Jewish and you have obtained righteousness through Christ, you have become a Christian, you've been saved, whatever language you want to use for it, if you've done that, you have won the lottery without even buying a ticket. This is the point that Paul is making. You have won Olympic gold without doing a day's training in your life for whatever event. Just pause for a moment. Think about how profound a blessing that is, how gracious God is to have bestowed that upon you, to have given you such blessing when you have not, when we as a group, the Gentiles, we did not pursue righteousness. We did not try to keep God's law, and yet God has given us righteousness. This is the heart of the matter, that God's relationship with everyone, this is kind of what Paul is going on to say in chapter 10, God's relationship with everyone, regardless of whether they are Jewish or a Gentile, is defined by grace. This is the defining characteristic of God's relationship with people. So many of us might think about defining God by his justice, by his sense of sort of right and wrong. And we want what we feel we deserve. And we want other people to get what we think they deserve. But Paul's point is, if it comes down to what we deserve, none of us would really get anything at all. Because we don't deserve anything. In fact, Paul's saying, well, the people of Israel might get something because they actually tried. They pursued righteousness. But the Gentiles, those of us who are not Jewish, we would get nothing. We deserve nothing. But God is not defined purely by being just, by his justice. That is not all God is. And this is at the heart of Paul's message to, again, to Jews and to Gentiles alike. Ephesians 2:8 does not say, you know, we are saved by justice. It says by grace we have been saved. By grace you have been saved through faith. We are saved by God's mercy. We are saved by God's grace, not his justice. So God is just. The Bible frequently reassures us on that matter. But he is merciful and gracious. And that is what we rely on. That is what we are forced to rely on. That is what saves us. And Paul explains how we have laid hold of God's mercy. How have we obtained this righteousness that comes through God's grace? Well, as it says here in this verse in Ephesians, through faith. And in Romans 9:30, the verse we just read, the Gentiles have obtained a righteousness by faith, through faith. That is how we have been made righteous. This is what we have trusted God. Or if you trusted God and what God has said, that makes you righteous, says Paul. And so finally, we're getting into chapter 10 now. Chapter 10, verses 1 to 4. Maybe we should stop there. You feel like you might have already had enough. There's enough to celebrate there. But no, I'm going to keep going because I've prepared a bit. So Romans 10, 1 to 4. So if we can have the next slide up, this should be a few relevant verses from Romans 10, 1 to 4. Brothers, says Paul, my heart's desire and prayer to God for the Israelites is that they may be saved. If you remember at the beginning of chapter 9 that Oz looked at last week, Paul again sort of made this same point. He said, I'd happily hand over my salvation. I would lose my salvation willingly if it meant my people could be saved. So on the same theme, Paul goes back here, my heart's desire and prayer to God for the Israelites is that they may be saved. For I can testify about them that they are zealous for God, but their zeal is not based on knowledge. Since they did not know the righteousness that comes from God, they sought to establish their own. They did not submit to God's righteousness. Christ is the end of the law so that there may be righteousness for everyone who believes. So Paul's kind of saying, look, he wants with all his heart, he wishes with all his heart that Israel had got this, had understood this, understood what he had understood what he was saying in his message, that through Christ, we receive righteousness by faith. But he's saying Israel have missed the boat. They should have been at the front of the queue. They should have been the first to lay hold of righteousness, but actually they kind of missed the point because they sought to establish a righteousness of their own rather than a righteousness that comes from God. They decided to create a righteousness that was based not on trusting God, not on resting in God, but in their success rate at keeping the law and building on the law. They've tried to get righteousness by their obedience to the law, not just kind of the Old Testament law, but the kind of the way they define the law, the way the things they had brought into the law to help them try and keep the law, the way they defined what it meant to work on the Sabbath and all those kinds of things. All these regulations and rituals they'd filled out and expanded and placed on top of what God had given them. And they said, this is how we know we are righteous. We obtain righteousness by being obedient to this thing we have created. And so Paul goes on to say, if we go to the next slide, verse 5, Moses describes in this way the righteousness that is by the law. The man who does these things will live by them. But the righteousness that is by faith says, do not say in your heart, who will ascend into heaven, that is to bring Christ down, or who will descend into the deep, that is to bring Christ up from the dead. But what does it say? The word is near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word of faith we are proclaiming. That if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is with your heart that you believe and are justified, and it is with your mouth that you confess and are saved. So Paul goes ahead and says, look, Moses says, you know, regarding the law, the one who lives by these things will be made righteous by them. He's saying, if you choose to live by the law, you can be made righteous by the law, but you have to live by everything in the law all of the time. Here's a little side comment, a little tangent, if you like. Sometimes we might think, or others might think, that we can, you know, please God or obtain righteousness by living a good life. The one who does these things will live by them. But the problem is in how we define that concept of a good life. The only sort of good life that the Bible talks about through which you can seek righteousness is the law. The law is given. You can't kind of make up your own law and say, well, if I live by that, I will be righteous. You can't say, well, you know, I don't really want to hurt anyone, and I try to do good things all the time, and I think that will make me righteous. God doesn't give us that option, according to his Bible. It's the law or nothing. That's the righteousness that sort of is offered, by words, that's the only way the Bible permits. We don't get to go to God and say, well, this is what I've decided the law is, God, and I will live by that. This is what I've decided what I need to do to be righteous, and you can rubber stamp that. The only way outlined in the Bible is the law God has given. Sometimes we think, you know, it doesn't really matter as long as our motives are good, as long as we're sincere in what we believe. But of course, I'm sure you know, we can be sincerely wrong about things. And in fact, Paul makes exactly this point. He says that my people were zealous. They were zealous. They were sincere in what they were doing, but it was not a zeal based on knowledge. So they have not obtained righteousness. Trying really hard to do the right thing doesn't matter if you do not understand what the right thing is, what it is that God is actually asking of us. And maybe some of us may respond, or people may respond, or people Paul was writing to may respond, where they say, yeah, okay, I admit I've failed in parts of living a good life. I'm not perfect, no one's perfect, but I'm pretty good. You know, I've managed to satisfy the big things of the law, the Ten Commandments. I've never murdered, I've never committed adultery, that kind of thing. I'm not perfect, but I'm good enough. Surely I'm good enough. But I think the problem with the way the Bible talks about God's law is that it doesn't define it in this way, kind of like a pick and mix aisle where you go through and you pull out the bits you want or the bits you think you can keep and the other bits that are too expensive for you or whatever you don't buy. The Bible kind of has this other way of viewing the law. I think Paul, when he's writing to the Galatians in chapter 5, and he's complaining or arguing against those who are saying, well, you can be, you know, you're not Jewish, you're a Gentile, you can be a Christian and follow Jesus, but you have to be circumcised first. You have to kind of come under the Jewish covenant. And one of the things Paul says there is, in Galatians 5:3, he says, this doesn't work that way. Don't you know that anyone who lets himself be circumcised is compelled to keep the whole law? You put yourself under the whole law. If you just think, well, I'll just take part of it, I'll just take the circumcision. Paul's argument is you're putting yourself under the whole law. And James, who another New Testament author, kind of has a very similar understanding of the law. He says in James chapter 2, verse 10, he says, don't you know, if you break the smallest part of the law, you are guilty of breaking the whole thing and are a lawbreaker. So both James and Paul didn't understand the law as something, you know, well, let's keep the important parts, but don't worry about the other parts. It was like a window. I should have a picture. The next picture is like a window, in that you can't just break part of a window. If you break part of the window, you've broken the whole thing. And this is how the Bible understands the law, I think. That if you've broken part of the law, you've broken the whole thing. And stand accused as a lawbreaker. The law's not compartmentalized. So Paul holds up, if you like, these two methods of righteousness. Keeping the law 100% all of the time. 100% effort, 100% success in order to chase righteousness. Or there's another way to achieve righteousness, Paul says. There is another way of getting righteousness. The righteousness that comes by faith, says Paul, does not say, you know, who will ascend into heaven, who will descend into the depths. And Paul kind of puts in a little comment about, you know, it's about bringing Christ up to our level or dragging him down. It's kind of like the righteousness that comes by faith doesn't say, well, I can try and get to Christ by my own effort or bring Christ to me by my own efforts. The righteousness that is by faith says, next slide, just says, Jesus is Lord. And with that faith, with that belief in your heart, you obtain righteousness. That's it. There must be some kind of catch. Surely. It sounds crazy, doesn't it? How do you achieve righteousness? By confessing that Jesus is Lord. There is no catch. Paul doesn't say, oh, and by the way, read the small print. You know, if you want righteousness. It's this simple. And it's kind of this very, again, it's defined by God's grace. It's, you know, it's so broad. There's no, you know, Paul doesn't even say you have to understand what it means. You just have to accept it. You just have to choose to say, right, you know what? Jesus Christ is Lord. And lay hold of that. And that is all it takes to obtain righteousness, says Paul. When Jesus speaks about this in Luke 18. There's a story he tells about a Pharisee and a tax collector. And the Pharisee who goes into the temple and prays and says, you know, God, I thank you that I am a righteous man. Essentially, I'm not like this, I'm not like that, I'm not like that tax collector. And the tax collector comes in and just says, Lord, have mercy on me. And Jesus says, it's the tax collector who goes home justified. It is the tax collector who has laid hold of righteousness because he has acknowledged that it is not his effort, his work, his own righteousness. He has laid hold of a righteousness that comes from God through faith. And the Gentiles, says Paul, they did not seek righteousness. We did not seek righteousness, but we have it. And we have it through believing that Jesus Christ is Lord. That's it. And Israel, who sought righteousness by working hard for it, have not laid hold of righteousness. Do you understand what this reveals about God's heart? He does not want your effort. He has never wanted your effort. The law has never, even when the law was given to Israel, it was never about effort and working hard. It was about, look, believe me, trust me, here is a way of living out a life that shows your righteousness, shows who I am. But that is not what makes you righteous. It has always been about trust and faith and accepting what God says. That's it. And it has never been about hard work. And it is not what God calls you to now, hard work. Sometimes, I know I'm a culprit of this myself. Thus, preachers are very good at preaching sermons. And you go away thinking that the message of our sermon is you just have to try harder, pray more, do this more, come to church more, whatever, fast more, whatever. But it's never been about that. It's never been about effort. Because that is never what God has been looking for. Our hard work and our effort. And the law was supposed to bring Israel to God. To help them to trust in him. To rest in his story. But instead it became something that took their eyes from God. Something they made a source of a righteousness that doesn't come from God. But God oozes mercy and grace so that those who did not seek him can enjoy him. But because God, you know, oozes mercy and grace, that means he is not finished with the people of Israel. He is not done with them. It's not a case of, well, they didn't listen, so, you know, let's push them to one side and move on to the Gentiles. Not at all. God's grace and mercy is extended to Israel too. Let's carry on. Romans 10, verse 11 to 13. As the scripture says, anyone, the next slide, please, Wes. Anyone who trusts in him will never be put to shame. For there is no difference between Jew and Gentile. The same Lord is Lord of all and richly blesses all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. So we've heard Paul's passion and his desire and his drive for his own people to be saved, to receive this message. Paul, if you know Paul's story, which you can read about in the sort of the first half of Acts, he's called by God to be an apostle, a messenger to the Gentiles, to the non-Jews. From the very beginning, that was his calling. And that was how he understood his calling from the very beginning. And yet, that never stopped him going to his own people, to the Jews, and proclaiming to them the same message he proclaimed to the Gentiles. If you read in Acts, you'll see that when Paul arrives in a new place, very often the first place he goes to is the synagogue, where the Jewish people are gathering and discussing and praying and worshipping God. He goes there first and tries to deliver the message, this same gospel, to them too. He's passionate for them. He cares deeply about his own people, because the message of grace, the message of salvation by faith that Paul is preaching, is for them too, not just for the Gentiles. Paul says, how then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can they preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. But not all the Israelites accepted the good news. For Isaiah says, Lord, who has believed our message? Consequently, the faith comes from hearing the message, and the message is heard through the word of Christ. But I ask, did they not hear? Of course they did. Their voice has gone out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. So Paul acknowledges that Israel has heard God's message of grace, but they have not necessarily responded. And Paul then goes on to address, as we come to the end of chapter 10, he goes on to address why. What's going on here? Why has God poured out his blessing on those who weren't his people rather than on those who were his people? Why has he blessed the Gentiles when Israel remains separated from the righteousness that comes by faith? And if you go to the next slide, in verse 19, Paul says, "Again I ask, does Israel not understand? First Moses says, I will make you envious by those who are not a nation, and I will make you angry by a nation that has no understanding." So Paul's kind of making the point, look, one of the reasons why God has blessed the Gentiles so richly is to stir jealousy in his own people, to wake Israel up, if you like, to make them desire God, to make them look at what is going on amongst those who are not Jewish and say, well, why is God working amongst them? We want God. Maybe we're missing something out. Maybe we're missing out on something. FOMO, fear of missing out. This is God's weapon here. To arouse jealousy in his people. As to say, we want that too. That's an interesting idea. Let's just pause for a moment. An interesting idea. If you are a Christian, if you are a follower of Jesus, are others jealous of you? Would I...
Thank you. Ooh. Thank you. Yes. If you are a follower of Jesus, would others look at you and be jealous of what you have? Not jealous of, you know, your nice house and your nice car and all the friends you've got. Jealous of, you know, what you've achieved in your life, how well your career's gone. But jealous of the righteousness that you have obtained. Jealous of whatever it is in your life that shows that you have been blessed by God. Does your life demonstrate God's blessing to others in such a way that others are jealous of what you have? That's an interesting question I ask myself every now and then. Would you have something that others actually want? Because this is your calling as a follower of Jesus, to live a life that others would be jealous of, to live a life that others would want to live. Again, not because of what you own or the amazing things you've done or the experiences that you had, but it's clear from your life that you know intimately the mercy and grace of God, the righteousness that comes from believing that Jesus is Lord. Okay, the last couple of verses. Whereas I think we're on the last slide now. Verses, this is the final part of this chapter, how Paul concludes this chapter. And Isaiah boldly says, "I was found by those who did not seek me. I revealed myself to those who did not ask for me. But concerning Israel, he says, all day long I've held out my hands to a disobedient and obstinate people." So this is Paul's concluding point here in this chapter. He's not done with this topic. In 11, he goes on to continue it. But this final point he makes is that God is still holding out his hands to a disobedient and obstinate people. Verse 11, as the scripture says, anyone who trusts in him will never be put to shame. Everyone who calls on his name will be saved. This is what Paul says in this chapter. And God is still holding out his hands to the disobedient and the obstinate and all those, offering them this grace that comes through calling on his name and nothing more. Anyone who calls on his name will be saved. The heart of God's grace, that not only does it not depend on your effort, but that it doesn't matter what your past is. It doesn't matter what your heritage is. It doesn't matter, regardless of how you view yourself, anyone who calls on his name will be saved. No one who trusts in him will ever be put to shame. This is the heart of Paul's message. This is the heart of God, the nature of God's mercy, the nature of God's mercy to Jew and Gentile alike, the nature of God's mercy to the whole world, the nature of God's mercy to you. Put down your tools and lay hold of this mercy that God offers to you, holds out to you every day, a mercy, a righteousness, a grace that comes without needing to understand everything, but just being willing to accept Jesus is Lord. Confess, believe, trust, and receive the grace that God offers. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for that grace and that mercy that has come to those of us who didn't even seek it, who didn't even desire it, and yet you have offered it to us because you couldn't do anything else. It's your nature to love. And I thank you for the freedom that comes through a faith that is about trusting you, being obedient to you, and not about trying to work hard enough to get your attention, to please you. And Father, I pray for everyone here, those at home who have been a part of our service this morning. Lord, I pray that all of us may enjoy and be able to lay hold of and gain the blessings of that grace and that mercy in our own lives, and that as a result we may be able to pour it out ourselves on others, that they may see you in us, they may desire you because of what they see in us. Lord, build your kingdom and glorify your name. Amen.